My guest at this time is former U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, John Bolton. He's now with the American Enterprise Institute. We want to get his thoughts on the latest news regarding three major hotspots on the foreign stage, namely Syria, Egypt, and Venezuela, as President Obama made some interesting comments about Hugo Chavez this past week. And, sir, it's always good to have you with us.
Well, thanks again for having me. Glad to be with you.
Increasing concern about the ongoing, essentially, civil war in Syria, the role of the Russians, and some other factors going on here. Let's start with the Russian influence here, with the weapons and certainly support through the UN Security Council and elsewhere. How much does that complicate things for us and anybody else who is not exactly a fan of the Assad regime and certainly doesn't want to see a ton of bloodshed?
Well, I think Russia's support is absolutely critical to Assad and his efforts to stay in power. And Russia, China to a lesser extent, and also Iran have very high stakes involved in keeping that regime going. This is one reason why Syria is a very, very different situation than Libya. And we see playing out right now in New York. The Russians are and the Chinese have for months blocked any additional sanctions against the government in Syria. They're blocking resolutions in the Security Council now that would step up pressure or perhaps authorize the use of military force against Assad. And I think the reason is clear. The Russians need the naval base they have long had in Syria. It's their only naval base in the Mediterranean for Iran. Syria functions almost like a satellite nation in the Arab world, and they're prepared to shed a lot of blood to keep their friends in power. So these are realities on the ground, and it's one reason why those terrible pictures of civilians being massacred keep coming out. That unfortunately, is the strategic reality there.
As much as we dislike, of course, the Assad regime, what do we know, if anything, more than we did when this started about the opposition? And if they were to win and remove the Assad regime, what would we be dealing with then?
Well, you know, there's a lot of speculation about who the leadership of the opposition is, how effective they are, who exactly is supporting them, the extent to which Al-Qaeda and other terrorist groups have infiltrated. And, you know, the fact is, even for those who support a more forward-leaning American position, there's been very little movement in the past 6 months in identifying dependable opposition leaders. We've had speculation about defections at high levels from the Assad regime, and you know, we can certainly hope that continues, but there's no guarantee that the opposition can restrain its own members. And you know, the tensions and animosities in Syria are so high that I very much worry that if the largely Sunni opposition does vanquish the Assad government, which is largely Alawite in the Muslim community, that there'll be a bloodbath. And, you know, the last thing I think any American wants to see is our weapons being used by the Syrian opposition to conduct that massacre.
Given the performance of the Obama administration as it relates to Russia over the last 3.5 years, there's obviously an effort not to ruffle a lot of feathers there. So will that severely limit what steps we might be willing to take as long as Russia is supporting the Syrian government as it currently exists?
Well, you know, something very interesting happened about a week ago. Secretary of State Clinton complained in a speech in Europe that neither Russia nor China were paying a price for their support for the Assad regime. And she said that they need to pay a price. Well, I've said that myself, so I was certainly gratified to hear Secretary Clinton say that. But there's been no evidence that the president or the rest of the administration are prepared to make Russia or China pay a price, in part, I think, because it would show that the administration's famous reset button in its policy with Russia has been a complete failure. We've made concession after concession to the Russians, given them what they want on strategic arms control, on missile defense, on a range of issues, and the treatment we get in response is just complete disdain by the Russians for what's going on in Syria and our concern about the civilian population.
We're talking with former U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, John Bolton. And, sir, last question on Syria, and that is that there are reports in the last day or so about chemical weapons being moved around the country. Some speculate that means they're just trying to keep them away from the rebels. Others suggest that that might mean that they're ready to use them. How do you read it?
Well, I think both of those are plausible theories. We really don't know, I think, what the Syrian government has in mind. That's just one more indication of how bad our intelligence is, both with respect to the Assad regime and the opposition. But it's very worrying, because if Syria were to use those chemical weapons, it would not be unprecedented. Bashar al-Assad's father used chemical weapons over two decades ago, killed thousands of people in the town of Hama, and there's no doubt the regime is perfectly capable of doing it again. By the same token, if those weapons fall out of the government's hands into terrorists like al-Qaeda, then you have the very grave risk that the weapons, beyond being a threat in Syria, could be a threat worldwide. So this seems to me to be something very definitely worth worrying about, and, you know, something that former Secretary General Kofi Annan ought to be concentrating on. Maybe he'll have more success dealing with the chemical weapons than he has in his broader ceasefire efforts.
Let's move on to Egypt now, and it's kind of been a game of ping pong here, back and forth. The military dissolved parliament, the parliament that was largely made up of Muslim Brotherhood. They did very well in the parliamentary elections, and they did very well in the presidential election. The new president ordered the parliament back into session. A court said, no, it's dissolved. It should stay dissolved. Now the parliament's meeting anyway. What's going to happen here in this obvious showdown between the military and the Muslim Brotherhood?
Well, as you rightly say, this is a power struggle that's going on. The Brotherhood feels they've got overwhelming popular support, and the fact that they and even more extreme Islamicist parties won close to 75% of the seats in parliament and the contested runoff election for president shows they do have a very, very substantial base. On the other hand, the military has held power in Egypt since they overthrew King Farouk in the early 1950s, and they're not going to give up easily. So I think the prospects are that the parties are both, they're testing each other. I don't think anybody at this point wants to go to violent conflict in the streets, although you can't rule that out. And I think they're trying to see if they can get a way of living together here, to find a way to carve up power. One thing that's certain is those pro-Western Democrats that the European and American media were constantly interviewing during the demonstrations in the so-called Arab Spring in Cairo's Tahrir Square over a year ago are no part of this equation.
I guess your reaction to another point that's been made in relation to Egypt. It was made several years ago in relation to the Palestinian elections, because, of course, President Bush strongly believed in spreading democracy around the world. But obviously, when Hamas won the elections, it was not the result that a lot of people wanted. And now we're seeing election results in Egypt and some other places that were part of the so-called Arab Spring that are yielding election results that we're not necessarily crazy about, which leads to the question of, is democracy a good idea everywhere if it doesn't necessarily lead to stability in terms of U.S. interests? How do you answer questions like that?
Well, you know, just because somebody wins power by means of a democratic election doesn't mean the United States has to accept it. You could say that Hitler and Mussolini came to power largely through democratic means. That doesn't give them any particular legitimacy. And I think in the case of Egypt, you know, obviously there is still a split in power between the military and President Morsi. I think the major U.S. interest here has got to be continued Egyptian compliance with the 1979 Camp David Accords with Israel. That has been the foundation, the rock upon which American policy has been built in the Middle East since that time. And I think it's very much in danger. Morsi said during successive election campaigns that he had profound disagreements with Camp David. I don't think we want to precipitate an Egyptian withdrawal. Hopefully we can avoid that. But I think we've got to keep our powder dry in the event that does happen, rather than cutting off aid ourselves. I think if they moved in that direction, then I think we would very seriously have to look at cutting it off.
Just about a minute left in our conversation with former U.S. Ambassador to the U.N., John Bolton. And, sir, another player in the region is Iran, but my question is more about Iran's relationship to Venezuela. Earlier this week, the president said that he needs to be vigilant, of course, to Iran engaging in destabilizing activity around the globe. But when it comes to Iran's coziness with Venezuela, he says, overall, my sense is that what Mr. Chavez has done over the last several years has not had a serious national security impact on us. Obviously, Mitt Romney and some others have strongly disagreed with that statement. What does that tell you?
Well, it tells me that in 3.5 years, President Obama still hasn't figured out what's going on in Venezuela. You know, the largest Iranian embassy in the world is in Caracas, and the reason for that is they're using Venezuela's huge oil revenues to help mask money laundering for Iran to evade international sanctions. Chavez has cooperated with Iran on a range of issues like refined petroleum, which Iran has been short of. They've worked together on a range of potential nuclear projects. Remember, Venezuela has the second largest supplies of uranium in the world after Canada, so very much of interest to Venezuela. And if you look at Venezuela's activities around the Western Hemisphere, destabilizing some of those fragile Latin American democracies, it is very clearly a threat to American security.
Mr. Ambassador, we'll have to leave it there. Thank you, as always, sir, for your time.
Well, thanks for having me.
Former U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, John Bolton. He's now at the American Enterprise Institute. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WorldNet Daily.